Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time detector of outside smoke.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that isn't afraid of emotions or of emoting, just as long as we can do it in the dark of a movie theater. Some of us, no names please, have been known to go through an entire packet of tissues, and that's just during the trailers. The two movies that we'll be discussing this week have little in common, except for the fact that each is an exercise in a certain kind of emotion. Trapped, the latest from writer-director M. Night Shyamalan, is an exercise in trademark Shyamalan horror, while Robot Dreams is a study of connection, love, and loss. Let's begin by delving into a movie by the guy some critics once likened to a contemporary Alfred Hitchcock. Since gaining fame in 1999 with The Sixth Sense, which won both critical and popular acclaim, M. Night Shyamalan has had a weirdly checkered career. Highs such as Signs and Split have been countered with such disappointments as Lady in the Water and The Last Airbender. His latest, Trap, comes after a summer-long ad campaign centered on the big-screen return of Josh Hartnett, who stars as a character accompanying his daughter, played by Ariel Donahue, to a concert that both he and we gradually realize has been specifically concocted to catch a serial killer known as The Butcher. The movie has its moments, even if Shyamalan exits the concert venue two-thirds of the way through, to add in one twist after the next, something that he's done more than once in the past. Despite the too busy ending he resorts to, Shyamalan makes sure that Hartnett and Donahue become an arresting pair, that his own daughter, Salika Shyamalan, sings and acts well enough to pass for a popular singer, and that Allison Pill, who shows up late, gives her own affecting performance. He even features a hard-to-recognize Haley Mills, but despite his best efforts, Trap never feels particularly scary, as any self-respecting serial killer suspense study should.
I want to start with Haley Mills, actually, because yeah. I did recognize her. You probably haven't seen her dance since the 1970s, maybe?
Well, certainly the 1960s.
Well, of course, I recognized her from the late 1980s TV show Good Morning, Miss Bliss, which was later turned into Saved by the Bell. So I've seen her more recently than you and recognized her right away. I said, Haley Mills is back. How great. Mm-hmm. Another Trap movie that she's in. Parent Trap, of course, being the first. And it's interesting that she's in this along with Josh Hartnett because he also has been somewhat absent from big screens. He's
no kidding.
In more stuff than Haley Mills in the last decade. Most recently, he was in the giant cast of Oppenheimer, and people were saying last summer, hey,
wow.
Josh Hartnett's back, and yeah, now he's top line.
He's been hanging out in England.
Yeah.
He's on TV in the Bear miniseries, too.
Well, and he was on a show called Penny Dreadful for a while, so
right.
It's not like he went away, but he was, you know, going to be an up-and-coming
yes.
movie star and then kind of step back from fame, and here he is now in Trap. And so it was good seeing actors like this on the big screen again because they've been gone for so long. I think the case with Haley Mills here is that I don't think Shyamalan really uses her at all. I was sort
no.
of perplexed by why she was in this movie, other than he might be a fan of, you know, her 70s psychological thrillers that, mm-hmm. that she was in before she kind of retired for a little while there. But it also doesn't really make sense to the plot why a nearly 80-year-old woman would be leading an FBI investigation
okay,
of this magnitude out in the field like that.
No,
I don't.
No, you're right. Because Anne Burgess, who's 87 years old,
right.
and is still working, and you know they had a recent documentary on her.
Sure,
I mean, I think she was
yes.
sort of,
but she wouldn't
know,
be out of
pattern.
Arena,
no,
probably,
I don't
you
think
know.
So.
You know, you kind of have to
Got
go
it.
Along with things like that in Trap because a lot of things beggar belief, as they tend to in Shyamalan films. But Josh Hartnett, I think, is if you're going to see this movie, he's the reason to see it. I was maybe a little bit skeptical of him playing this role because he's not only a father of a teenager, which, you know, he could be in real life, but I'm still thinking of him as like Pearl Harbor Josh Hartnett
yes,
a little bit.
Yes.
But he's believable at that. But he also has to be this kind of cunning sociopath as well. And we can talk maybe a little bit more about sort of the plot machinations that come into play here, because I don't think that's giving anything away. There's a lot of stuff that happens, as you said, Dan, in the back half of Trap that would constitute as spoilers. The fact that he's the guy that the cops are trying to catch is given away in all of the
If you watch
the trailers.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the premise of the movie. But I thought he was sensational in this.
Yes.
I had such a great time watching him. He is a blast to watch, and he's having fun. I think that this movie, like so many other Shyamalan movies, doesn't hold up all the way through. I think once this movie leaves the pressure cooker of the arena, that first hour where it sets up all of those chess pieces is so fun to watch. I think once it leaves the arena and it has to jump through a lot of hoops to get him out the door, I think the movie kind of falls apart quite a bit, actually. But
and there's
that
a lot
Hartnett
of
performance is holding it together all the way to
well,
the end.
Well, and I have
just
to
barely
give a huge shout out to the young girl. So
yeah, she's quite
Ariel
good.
Donahue.
Yeah, yeah.
Who
as
I,
the daughter.
Yeah, I was not familiar with her at all. But she just seemed like the most natural actor in the entire thing. Because, you know, here she is so excited to go to this concert of her dreams situation. And
Lady Raven is
right.
The name
yeah.
of the star.
And, of course, also the fact that we would be focusing on after the years of Beyonce and Taylor Swift. I mean, we have this film focused in the concert venue, that Smile 2 film that's coming out later is focused on that. So it makes sense that we'd use this as a venue to showcase horror in particular. But she was great, I thought. They had a natural sort of chemistry with each other. There's this sort of strange thing that I expected would go in a different direction because apparently she's sort of at odds with one of her former friends. And then the mom encounters Josh Hartnett's character. And I thought something would happen with that particular interaction in a way that didn't really come to fruition.
No, it's a red herring.
Right,
total
exactly,
red herring.
Exactly. And so I agree with you. I think this is 2/3 of a really good movie. Mm-hmm. And then it was as though he didn't know exactly what to do with it later on. But let's talk, what do you think about his daughter?
Shyamalan's daughter?
Yeah.
Salika.
Well, so she becomes a much more prominent piece of this plot.
In the final third,
Yes. And I think my issue with that is that I don't think she's a very good actress quite yet. I think this is her first acting role, at least in this kind of
capacity.
She
was believable as the performer.
But completely believable as a performer. And I was reading that she wrote and recorded all of these original songs as Lady Raven. And to my ear, they sounded like they could be legitimate pop songs. Like, so very convincing on that front. But I think once Lady Raven becomes involved in the plot, that's when a movie that's already barely holding on in terms of, you know, believability and plausibility, I think the House of Cards kind of comes tumbling down. It doesn't make much sense.
Trapp,
you know,
is like many of his movies. I mean, he paints himself into a corner.
Yeah.
And then in this case, he jumps out the window. You know, I mean, that's how he escapes. And, you know, that final third.
And digs a tunnel under the ground, maybe.
That final third kind of explains a lot of what went on.
Right.
And there are some twists there that are really pretty interesting. But I think I'm going to agree with both of you that the only reason really to see Trapp is to see Josh Hartnett.
And,
I particularly loved one scene when his daughter is pulled out on the stage to perform with Lady Raven and the expressions on his face. On one, he's totally proud. It's my daughter and I love. But then he's going, oh, my God, they're going to get me. Oh, but I'm proud of my daughter. So someone, oh, my God, they're going to get me. And he goes back and forth. And it's just exactly what a real person would do.
Well, and the whole sort of plot about catching someone at these concerts. I mean, they have staged these fake events, you know, to ensnare people who
or they've used real events as
a
kind of sting operation.
Right. So that was true. Also, maybe this isn't appropriate to bring up in the Spokane community, but we do have serial killers who walk among us. And, you know, most notably here, Robert Yates. Just recently, within the last year, the sort of nerdy engineering guy who they caught on Long Island. And so I think that, you know, he had so many different contemporary references going on in this movie that I think they sort of fell all over themselves in some way.
Well, and I would also shout out, because Shyamalan is, you know, an incredible stylist even in his bad films, and I would say that Trapp is no exception. I don't think this is an entirely bad film, but it let me down. But, I mean, the movie looks incredible. It was shot by Sayumbu Muktipram, who is Luca Guadagnino's regular cinematographer. He just shot Challengers earlier this year. And I think he makes this movie look amazing. The camera's constantly moving around. It creates that sense of movement and panic and paranoia. And there are all these really cool, you know, split diopter shots, like something out of a De Palma film. And like a lot of De Palma films, I agree with you that it paints itself into a corner and it doesn't quite know what to do. It also feels like what he did with the movie Split is I wonder if he's setting this up to be chapter one in a longer saga. Because it ends with, without giving anything away, it ends with a set of ellipses.
Yes.
And it could go anywhere. And I would maybe I'll eat my words on this, but I wouldn't be too upset if there was a sequel in which we got to see Josh Hartnett do more devious things, because he's having a lot of fun in this role. And again, it's really good to see him and Haley Mills on the big screen again.
Haley Mills. And let's point out, when you were talking about The Parent Trap, it's the original Parent Trap.
And I will say one of the twists is not that the Haley Mills character turns out to be twins. That's not a twist in this movie. I was waiting for it.
Anyway, that was our discussion of M. Night Shyamalan's film Trap. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts at Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss Robot Dreams. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbin, and I discuss the latest M. Night Shyamalan release, Trap. Let's now move to something entirely different, if no less an attempt to tap into some basic human emotions. The film is Robot Dreams, which is one of the five films from 2023 nominated for a Best Animated Film Oscar. Robot Dreams was directed by the Spanish filmmaker Pablo Berger, which he adapted from Sarah Varon's 2007 graphic novel. The two share screenplay credits. It involves a character we come to know simply as Dog, a canine living a human-like experience alone in a New York City apartment amid a virtual zoo of other animals representing the whole range of Manhattan humanity. It's the 1980s, and to find a companion, Dog orders a build-it-yourself robot, which becomes the character's constant companion and best friend. Something happens, though, that separates them, and as they struggle in their individual lives, they tend to dream both of what has been and what yet might be. Berger deserves credit for taking Varon's images and animating them so well that they end up capturing the entire dictionary of human feelings, from joy to disappointment, frustration to the moments of discovery that any newborn entity, human, animal, or robot, is likely to feel. In the end, Robot Dreams, which is screening at the Magic Lantern Theater and will stream at a later date on Apple TV Plus, is a bittersweet study of the value of connection, the pain of loss, and the endurance of the human spirit to face such loss with acceptance and grace.
Dan, you pretty much summarized the whole movie, so I'm not exactly sure what I can add to it. But Robot Dreams, we were talking ahead of the show about the fact that, you know, it was nominated for an Academy Award this past year. So Robot Dreams, why is it now almost the end of the summer that this is being introduced into theaters? Because this really is the type of movie I think you should see on the big screen because it's visually so detailed. I mean, it looks sort of bare bones when you first, you know, sit down, and but then you see
it has very cartoon qualities,
right? Yeah. But then you see all the little details, and as someone who lived in New York City in Manhattan during this 80s time period, I mean, it just really captured all the vibrancy that was happening and so forth.
Did they have a lot of robots?
Yeah, and well, there were a lot of llamas there, if I remember correctly. Yeah, that was the big thing. But yeah, so it really has this richly detailed feel if you go a little deeper. But it really is the relationship between Dog and robot and sort of how that plays out. You know, it's a film, Dan, you said about connection. It's also a film about loss. It's a film about moving on, you know, and how do you accomplish that and how does it happen? And I think that, you know, we never really know what the actual relationship is between Dog and robot. Are they...
Much less genders. We don't know their genders either.
Well, and I was wondering about that too, because at first it seems like he just needs a buddy to keep him company, but then it does kind of seem like there's maybe a romantic component to this. And there's a moment where he looks across the way in his apartment and he sees, you know, a couple sort of cozying up next to each other in the apartment across the way.
Too, yeah,
so
right.
You start to wonder, you know, and there are kind of passing glances and touches. And so, yeah, the movie never really makes
right,
that
Right, which
clear.
I think is good.
Yeah,
I mean,
so
I think
too.
That's a positive. But then sort of one of the highlights of their bonding experience is going to Jones Beach or going to Coney Island or, you know, something akin to that. And then that turns into a negative experience. So Robot Dreams really runs sort of the emotional gamut. And I just thought it was really touching, really beautiful. And I would say go see it on the big screen at the Magic Lantern.
Yeah, because then you'll really see all of those details that you mentioned about Robot Dreams, because that's what I also kind of really locked onto is, you know, beyond these really almost primitive themes that it's dealing with. I don't even think we've mentioned the fact that there's no dialogue in this movie.
There's no dialogue.
It's not silent because there's lots of musical cues, including Earth, Wind & Fire's
September,
which is a leitmotif throughout. And I never mind hearing that song. But yeah, there's sound effects and everything, but there's no actual spoken dialogue. And it's obviously a movie about relationships, about friendships. It's about that wistfulness and sadness, and maybe even, you know, a little bit of happiness that you feel thinking back to relationships that didn't go the way that you thought they would or didn't take off. And I also kind of latched onto this in the middle portion of the film where Dog and Robot are first separated, is it's also a movie about the challenges of making friends or starting new relationships when you're an adult. I think there's a lot of that going on.
And there's been a lot written about that recently.
Absolutely.
And about the sort of plague of loneliness and so forth. And so this really feels timely in many ways.
Yes. But going back to the world of Robot Dreams, I liked the fact that it was this sort of almost utopian version of New York. I mean, at first you think, okay, is this some kind of retro futurism? But it does seem, you know, like it's 40 years ago or something like that. And you get all these shots of, you know, the Strand bookstore and they rent videos from Kim's and all of those nice little touches. And there are these kind of cute little passing references to iconic New York movies like Taxi Driver and Tootsie and Manhattan. Of course, there's the iconic shot of them sitting there under the bridge.
And the Twin Towers.
Yes. And I think
that's Towers.
I think that's a key element to what's going on here in Robot Dreams. And that idea of looking back at a time and maybe imagining it in a way that it wasn't actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something to that. It's not just a movie about these characters or figures or symbols or however you want to think about them. It's also about the place that it's set. It's very much about New York.
Yeah. I want to point out that the movie that it lost out to was Hayao Miyazaki's The Boy and the Heron.
At the Oscars.
Yes, at the Oscars. And I don't think there's anything about Robot Dreams that matches the artistry of Miyazaki. I mean, he's a master in them in and of himself. But it does do exactly what it wants to do, and it does capture all these emotions. The other thing that I wanted to point out was the script was a lot more sophisticated than you might notice it first off, because there are the dreams that the robot has, the dreams the dogs have, that take you in a specific arena, and you go, oh, we're going to have a happy ending here, or something. This is interesting how this is happening. And then you find out, it was all a dream.
The fake
out. There's a lot of sophistication for a movie that at first glance is simply a cartoon about a dog living in the big city.
I do have to issue a warning, though. If you live with somebody who's a whistler or someone who hums, you will be subjected to Earth, Wind, and Fire medleys for at least a week. So just be on notice.
This sounds personal.
It sounds like you're speaking from experience. Hypothetical.
Yeah, well, you know, I can't think of a better song to subject someone to than September by Earth, Wind, and Fire.
I want to talk a little bit about the director, Pablo Berger, who doesn't have a lot of titles to his name, and I had to go on IMDb and look at, you know, where did this guy come from? And I had seen one of his films, which came out about a decade ago, and I had forgotten about it, but it was called Blanca Nieves. And it was this pastiche on silent film, kind of like a Guy Madden film in that way, where it looked like something that, you know, was dredged out of the 1920s. But it was this really unusual take on the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs story. And it also kind of has, I think it's taking some influence from someone like Tarsem, who made The Cell and The Fall. And that was a live action film, by the way. And so obviously this is an entirely different mode from that. You know, it's this very wistful, sweet, but ultimately kind of dark, if you look a little bit harder, cartoon. And talking about the style of it, you mentioned that it kind of has this simplistic style. It does have this sort of hand-drawn, like something you might see on a doodle on a napkin or something. But all of those doodles make up this really big, bustling world. Mm-hmm. And that's what I liked about it. I know a lot of people have seen Robot Dreams and had really intense emotional reactions to mm-hmm. it. I've read about them. I didn't quite, even though I thought it was really sweet and I thought, as you said, more sophisticated than it initially appears. It's about 95 minutes long without credits. I think if it had been a good maybe 15 minutes shorter,
yeah, I
wonder if it would have
80.
Had more of an emotional wallop for me.
Well, although
you haven't lived long enough. You have a few losses in your life.
I've never had a loss in my life. I can't relate to that at all.
I really liked the way that all the different characters were drawn because you were trying to figure out, or I was trying to figure out, oh, so if this is the octopus down in the subway playing the drums,
the bucket drums.
Right, exactly. What's that supposed to resemble? Or, you know, just these little, I mean, how he chose the specific animal motifs to represent different aspects of New York life,
well, give,
I thought was
give
fascinating.
Give Sarah Varon credit. She's the one whose
right.
book that it's based upon.
Well, and you get to see, you know, at the very beginning of the movie, as Robot is coming to life, he's looking at the city in an entirely different way than Dog has. You know, Dog is
yes.
is jaded
yes.
and can't really, you know, he doesn't look at the world with wonder anymore.
Yeah, he's delighted. The robot is delighted.
Yeah.
And there are all these great shots. You know, I'm thinking of the jelly bean scene.
Yeah.
Also, it was kind of fun to recognize. So at one point, Dan says, where are they? And I said, well, it looked like they were going into the West Village. And now it looks like they ended up in Alphabet City or the East Village. Mm-hmm. You know, so we were having fun playing with that, you know, a little bit, too. So I would say, yeah, you can wait to see it on Apple TV. But why not, you know, take advantage of the air conditioning
support the
and
magic
the
lantern.
Offerings
yes.
at the Magic
mm-hmm.
Lantern and go see it now.
And as you said, bring some tissues because you may have...
I
a
think
tier
Dan said
or
that.
Two. Yes.
Yes.
Dan said
yeah,
that.
Exactly. At any rate, that was our discussion of a movie that is playing at the Magic Lantern Theater called Robot Dreams. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender and Mary Petruthart and I discussed the M. Night Shyamalan film Trap. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the great novelist John Steinbeck. It's so much darker when a light goes out than it would have been if it had never shone. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.